We present The Hitchhiker's Guide to DXing by John Nathan, with Ian Desteins as the narrator.
It's estimated that psychologists, psychoanalysts, psychotherapists and others with a leaning toward the psyche have devoted literally thousands of seconds to the study of the shortwave listener. They calculated that the average SWL spends well over a day annually just listening to DX Jukebox, a couple of weeks trying to catch up with the news, does three times his fair share in keeping the post office in business, and came up with lots of other end-to-end statistics. To Oliver Pass, though, living on a small farm in Gelderland, there was just one word to sum up shortwave listeners: misunderstood. Nothing seemed to work out as it said in the handbooks. Friends were not amazed at his QSL collection. They thought Damascus was that household bleach to clean round the bend, and they couldn't understand who in their right mind wanted to listen to Bulgarian folk music at 3 o'clock in the morning. But Oliver had an extra problem.
You are. I thought you were up here in the radio shack again. I'm turning into a DX widow here. Every time I talk to you, all I get is, yes, or no. Or if you're really in a good mood, can you verify that, dear? You haven't spoken to me since I made Christmas cards out of those pretty postcards you keep getting.
But they were rare QSLs. They cost a fortune.
Precisely.
Oh, come on. Shortwave listening is the most exciting hobby you can have. Up here you can tune into the world, picking up distant stations from places you could never afford to visit, writing to these people, and making hundreds of new friends all the time.
And losing a couple of hundred around here. What a waste.
And so it seemed. Until one day, when Radio Banana in the Caribbean announced the results of its X1X anniversary competition.
Good evening, imperialists. Tonight we bring you a commentary entitled "The Reactionary Bourgeois Imperialists Can Never Crush the Hegemonism of the Aggressive Revisionists to Counteract the Revolution." This is followed by a song for all geologists. But first, the winners of our essay contest. They will enjoy a sightseeing tour of our happy country, visiting schools, factories, hospitals, and other tourist attractions. The first prize of a week's trip goes to Mr. Oliver Pass, and the second prize of a 14-day trip...
It was thus no accident that Oliver was up early this cold February morning, taking a walk across the fields. "We'll pick you up," the letter had said.
"Hey, what the hell do you think you're trying to do, land this helicopter on my place?"
"Shut up and get in the chopper."
"Get in?
How else are we going to get you to this wonderland of happy children with bad teeth?" "Hang on, friend. I'm taking her up."
"Drosophilus."
"Bless you."
"No, that's the name, stupid. I'm the second prize winner in this fun pack contest. 300-word essay praising all their achievements, and I win the holiday. What did Mother call you?"
"Pass."
"All right, let's try something easier. When were you born?"
No, the name is Pass, Oliver Pass. And I just copied out the program schedule to win the first prize. Say, how long have you been listening?"
It's been some time since shortwave listeners first heard the mysterious machine gun on the radio dial. Experts explained that it was a new type of weapon to change the weather, or that it was a special radar system to see over the horizon. It would pop up here and there and drown out some mundane program or hands discussing the weather. And still, nobody today realizes that it's the second attempt to travel in time. H.G. Wells had a go, but what if you could really hear the past? Then, on a lonely farm in Tiberia, an out-of-work professor reasoned that the answer to time travel must lie in shortwave. Every hour of the day, stations beam signals up to that layer in the atmosphere called the ionosphere, in the hope that the messages of goodwill, friendship, and possible future annihilation will bounce around the world to hit the target area. But what of those poor signals that don't bounce? What happens to them? They go straight through the atmosphere, only to be trapped by the Earth's magnetic field, and they're doomed to orbit the Earth forever like a forgotten satellite, each one a capsule of time. But if you could knock them out of the orbit, let them come crashing back to Earth and listen to them, what an opportunity to set the history book straight, to put the historians out of work and give their jobs to more important out-of-work professors. The chance, for example, to find out what programs the Romans used to listen to.
This is the Vox Romana, the news read by Q. Fabius Pictorinus. The Emperor Augustus Caesar has issued a new executive directive ordering all citizens of the empire to register for the census.
But to unlock those capsules of the past, the radio machine gun was developed, taking pot shots at parts of the sky, sometimes hitting passing signals and the odd aircraft or two.
Dum-da-dum, da-dum-da-dum. Enjoying yourselves back there?
Not too bad. Bit bumpy, thank you, Pontius.
So you guys are radio hams, then?
No!
Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to offend. I used to be in that game once, but the wife started causing deliberate interference.
Well, I think you can sum up amateur radio in three words. QRZ, QSL, QRT, and even that doesn't make sense, whether or not you know what it means.
But don't you ever have the urge to talk back at the stations you hear?
After most of the broadcast, the best thing to do is to shut up or join the army to travel to far-off lands and teach those little creeps a lesson.
Yeah, but I find most radio people can't even communicate with the people around them, let alone try and make contact with voices thousands of miles away. A friend of mine used to get murderous threats from the bedroom window of the house next door every time he switched on the lawnmower, and he only ever saw the bloke once when he came round to apologise for his antenna mast crashing into the greenhouse.
Ah, but you're so negative. If you're willing to spend $2,000, you can get a superb receiver that will let you listen to the world.
For that price, you can go and see it.
Talking of which, when do we get to this happy, smiling people's airport?
When we arrive. But looks like a spot of turbulence ahead, so hang on, fellas.
Hey, what the hell's that?
Something on the radar, it seems. Let's have a look. Jeez!
Something's wrong.
Hey, come and have a look at this.
Where's the signal gun, then?
That is the signal. The screen's just covered with noise.
So now we don't know where we are?
Basically, yes.
Basically, no. I think we're going down.
Can't be.
Look at the altimeter over there.
Check the radio.
What's the frequency?
About 26 megahertz.
There's your answer, then. Resonance.
Oh, so you can explain everything and put it right.
Did I say that? Now, it's quite clearly a case of something out there is feeding all of us here with quite a bit of energy, causing the whole of this contraption to resonate at its natural frequency.
In other words?
Oh, metal fatigue on this thing will probably mean we'd break up into thousands of little bits and be mapped out over an area of 5 miles or so.
So what can we do?
Nothing much you can do. You could try thinking of soft rubber pillows and foam mattresses.
Will that really help?
No, but it's the thought that counts.
Well, we've got to do something. Now, what do people in all these airport films do at a time like this?
That's it. Brilliant. Clichés.
Do you mean at this point in time, the only course open to avoid certain downfall is to bring back golden memories of days gone by?
You don't mean...
I'm afraid I do.
And so they were saved. Not by clichés, of course, but by Newton's third law. To every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. As Pontius clung wildly to the controls, the huge energy being blasted at them cushioned the landing. Well, just slightly, so that the helicopter came down in a meadow of buttercups. It was some time before Oliver regained consciousness.
Here, are you okay?
Oh, my. Let's see. Eyes, nose, mouth, a few teeth, glasses, wallet. Yes, I've got the full set. Where's that pilot bloke?
Can't see him anywhere. The chopper's badly damaged by the look of things. We're lucky to be alive. I suppose Pontius has gone off to find help.
Oh, just gone off. I suppose we must have been knocked out for a while when this crate connected with the ground. I wonder how long we've been here.
I don't know. I'm not staying here, though. Can you walk?
Well, I may be a radio fanatic, but I haven't forgotten everything.
Hey, look at this place. Good old millions of miles from anywhere. Super tranquility.
And it's peaceful, too. Lush green meadows, gently rolling hills, few trees. Hey, nice place to put up an aerial.
Looks as though somebody already has. Isn't that an antenna mask? Through that gap in the trees.
Where? I can't see it.
Look to the middle of that clump of trees on your left. I'm sure that looks like a tower of some sort.
Ah, I can see it now. Could be, I suppose. But at the moment, digestion has a priority over DX. Don't you think we ought to make contact with civilization first?
Well, if it is a transmitter site, there must be somebody there. I think our best bet is to investigate in that direction. You coming?
All right. Hope they've got a canteen.
It can now be revealed that Oliver and Drosophilus are unlikely to find an English breakfast in the building through the trees. In fact, as we shall shortly see, our two travellers have stumbled across a very important secret in international communications. Back in the 80s, man first began to exploit satellite broadcasting in direct competition with good old shortwave. Cable television offered wider and wider choices of viewing, and 30 stations was considered a minimum that one could put up with. But with the rise in fuel costs and increased mechanization, more and more people stayed in bed tucked between the warm sheets watching the tube. But while there were so many channels, there were few people making new programs, because they too were tucked up between the warm sheets watching the 3D screen. And so, the television stations got tired of John Wayne movies and reruns of old news bulletins. People began to turn on their shortwave radios to see if there was anything new on that part of the digital dial. A few stations were still going. Nalbania still had its half hour of news for statisticians, and listeners were still playing chess against a great Prussian grandmaster, with each move being democratically decided. But the vast majority of stations had run out of money and new ideas and had sold their broadcasting rights to the only country that didn't have a balance of payments deficit, Polizania. This small but significant country was ruled by a democratic workers' coalition whose leader made all the decisions. In the 1970s, they had a brilliant idea of creating a shortwave station for a few minutes each week and offering a very rare QSL card for 20 IRCs. Not only did DXers send in their IRCs, but they also sent mint stamps, postcards, and other useful enticements, all of which were sold to balance the national economy. The odd dollar bill came in useful too. Using the proceeds, they developed MCM, multi-channel modulation, or a method of putting 10 or more different programs side by side on the dial and only using one transmitter. It then cost only a few pennies to rerun old programs or offer advice to those in the shortwave copying business. All of this is, of course, unknown to our friends, who by now have started walking up the main path towards the large building in front of them.
Can't see any sign of life behind those windows. Can you?
No, it all looks pretty blank. Not much hope of rescue, or a hot meal in the canteen. Makes me wonder what possessed me to start out on this trip in the first place. Just think, I could be home in the shack at this very moment, giving the wife a few crises to mill over the washing up downstairs, and collecting some more pretty souvenirs.
Just a second. Looks like there is a reception committee after all.
Co wy tu robicie?
What did she say?
Co wy tu robicie?
I thought she said that. Bang goes the English breakfast. And all the trimmings.
She's got all the trimmings. Oh, can you help us, please?
What are you two doing here?
We're lost, actually. And extremely hungry.
But how did you get here?
If I had the odd day to spare, I'd tell you.
What is this place, anyway?
You have no idea.
Seems to be connected with radio of some sort. Those aerials over there are definitely high-frequency jobs. And at a rough guess, I'd say that one was cut for about 41 metres.
And that's a nice pair of balanced feeders you got, too.
Don't be personal.
Eh? I wasn't. How else do you connect the aerial?
Oh, well, I think you'd better come with me and meet the boss. He'll decide what's to be done with you. Znalazłam tych dwóch w ogrodzie. Anglicy.
Ah, a rare treat. And what brings you to Polizania, my dear fellows? That is what you say in English, isn't it?
Polizania? Where on earth is that?
Down the corridor, third on your left.
No, no, my friend means... What did you say the name of this country is?
Oh, Polizania. Brackets, Popular Democratic Unity, country of. Close brackets. We make most of the radio programs you hear on shortwave since many of our rivals went bankrupt.
You're joking.
I wish I were. Putting out 10,000 hours of programs a day is exhausting.
Oh, come on. I simply can't put this together. You mean, when I've been listening around, some of the stations I've been hearing are not really those stations? But you lot here pretending to be them instead? Because they can no longer afford to be on the air?
Yes, rather Campbell-esque, don't you think? Come on, I'll show you around. Oops, wrong door.
Hang on, I'm sure I recognize those numbers.
Yes. Number of times I've tuned round the bands and heard little old ladies and mechanical male voices reading out numbers. Spy stations, they say.
Not spies, so much as battleships.
Ah, but the stations sound as if they are broadcasting coordinates.
And they're repeated, twice.
Still battleships. What do you think the superpowers do during peacetime, cruising around the big oceans of the world? The commanders play a daily game of battleships. Each superpower gives the other side a set of coordinates, hoping to wipe out the other side. Great fun on paper. Keeps the lads amused. Now, here's the door I wanted. This is the copying room.
Oh, so you have a transcription service, and this is where you do mass duplication. I see.
Hang on. Let me finish. This is where we copy ideas, not tape.
Now, let's see. Radio newsreel, newsline... 25 hours. Look out.
And then in here, we have Bob, who looks after transmissions.
Oh, Oliver, pass that. Living on a small farm in Keller. That was just one word, sir.
What did he say?
Nobody really knows. He talks in upper sideband. Been at this transmitter game too long, poor sod. We put in all the fading and interference artificially to fool the listener into believing that we're much further away. Listen to this piece of music on the speaker over here. Now we'll get Fred here to press some buttons and put in the shortwave effects we use. Right, Fred? And we can even do flutter fading if you like.
Yeah, but what about faking the distant SSB transmissions?
Single sideband. Oh, that's the easiest of the lot of them. I'll show you. Okay, Fred, SSB?
fascinating place. I can't wait to write the story up.
Oh, yes. And what makes you think you're leaving?
What other mysteries lie in this huge concrete complex in Polytsania? And will our friends escape to travel and expose other myths of shortwave listening? Find out on April 30th in Episode 2 of The Hitchhiker's Guide to DXing.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to DXing was produced in stereo by Radio Nederland, based on the experiences of a shortwave listener. For those listening to this in monotonous mono over the airwaves, that's just too bad.